Welcome, welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're discussing Brothers Karamazov, Book 5, Chapter 5, Part 1. The questions I asked were these. Again, what is Ivan on about? What were those three perfect questions he was on about? And general discussion. Techrific said, those three perfect questions are the three temptations of Christ. TLDR, hedonism, hunger / satisfaction, egoism, spectacular throw / might, and materialism, kingdoms / wealth. John the Evangelist, in his epistle, calls these temptations in-world as lust of eyes, materialism, lust of body, hedonism, and pride of life. God placed an intolerable burden of freedom upon man, the new heresy mentioned in the Reformation. This is the argument between Protestants and Catholics that essentially led to the religious wars in Europe. The great star is an allusion to the idea of free will or determinism. The bitter pill is determinism. The Reformation, headed by Martin Luther, essentially started a big conflict between the Protestants and the Catholics that is ongoing to this day. Luther didn't believe in free will, but was a determinist, and opposing him was the great humanist Erasmus, defending the Catholic position that determinism leads to the breakdown of the justice system here on earth. Swim said, the mama fish, he said, I did not know that about Martin Luther, i.e. denial of free will, and Erasmus. Here's what I got taught in catechism classes. The catechism of the Roman Catholic Church asserts that freedom is the power rooted in reason and will. It goes on to say that God created man, a rational being, conferring on him the dignity of a person who can initiate and control his own actions. God willed that man should be left in the hand of his own counsel, so that he might, of his own accord, seek his Creator and freely attain his full and blessed perfection by cleaving to him. Per Wikipedia, theological determinism is a form of predeterminism which states that all events that happen are preordained and are predestined to happen by God/gods, or that they are destined to occur given its omniscience. Theological determinism exists in a number of religions, including Jainism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. It is also supported by proponents of classical pantheism, such as the Stoics and Baruch Spinoza. I'm team free will. I like a god or gods who is figuring it out along with me. Well, I mean, is anyone still determinism? We're aware. We make decisions. If we were just rocks knocking about the universe, unable to steer ourselves, then you could argue that everything was determined already. There was a path that cannot be steered from. But, I don't know. Seems like a funny argument to be having. I never really quite got the whole free will, does free will exist or not question, when choices clearly do exist. Probably argue with me on that. Also, I wanted to say, in yesterday's episode, I said Christianity is stupid. Which, you know, it is. But it's not that stupid, and it's also not more stupid than anything else. I kind of felt like I was shitting on some people's religion there, but atheism is stupid. Agnosticism is stupid. We're all idiots, so I didn't mean to single out Christianity by saying it was stupid. I also was like, yesterday when I made that comment, I'm like, that's kind of a dick thing to say, but I mean, I'm not going to convert any Christians. Like, no one's going to hear that and be like, what it is? So I didn't really feel like, you know, whoever heard that would know I'm just dicking around. But then I woke up and saw that the Church of Notre Dame is burning. And I was like, I know I'm not responsible for that, but I still feel sad to see a relic of, I suppose, is it Catholicism, the Notre Dame Church? I'm not really sure. To see a relic of religion destroyed. Because, I don't know, it was such a beautiful building, such a beautiful institution, and the history there and the artworks inside all that. Real shame. JMMA8779 said, "This so far has been a bit of a slog. Last chapter seemed to flow nicely, but I'm pretty eager for Ivan's rant to be finished. Essentially, what I'm getting is the general anti-organized religion argument. That might be an overgeneralization, and he makes some decent points, but I'm really wishing he would get on with it." Yeah. Any time these Karamazov brothers open their mouth, and the dad, they just talk for 5 pages. It's bloody infuriating. So I'm right there with you, Jay Mama. Swim said, the Mama Fishy said, "Oh, good. Verb using... Oh, good verb using rant. That's how I feel too. You're bringing up anti-organized religion is so apropos of the 21st century or the late 20th century. It's why I am lapsed Catholic. Gives a whole different and unique spin on this chapter." Spitflame said, the basic message here is that there's no greater source of suffering than freedom of conscience. Better to be happy and told what is right than to be left to your own will and be miserable. The latter is what Jesus did, which greatly angers the Inquisitor. This is a very good and succinct statement, said Swim, said the Mama Fishy. Well done. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Spitflame. That's a very simple way to think about it. The suffering from freedom of conscience, freedom to make up your own set of morals and judge for yourself what's good and bad, does lead to a lot of suffering. Because we're pretty good at doing the old mental gymnastics and convincing ourselves that we're in the right, we're in the clear, when left to our own devices. We really do need someone to spot us, you know? Like at the gym, when someone stands behind you and helps, we kind of need that in our own decision-making. Someone to just be there, like, keeping you on track. Or something. Swim said, the Mama Fish, he said, this might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I found it fascinating. Below is a YouTube video equating the Grand Inquisition to Batman from The Dark Knight. Warning, if you're squeamish about rough language, it's not for you. Curse words. Okay. Well, I'm not going to watch that now because of like copyright stuff, but... And also, it'd probably be quite boring to watch a YouTube clip on a podcast. But I will watch that. It sounds interesting. If you search for the Grand Inquisitor Batman, I'm pretty sure you'd find it. Actually, let me click on it and see what the title is so you can search for... Yeah, it's called The Dark Knight / The Grand Inquisitor Special Episode by Thug Notes Wisecrack. It's a Wisecrack video. Temptation of Christ. Oh, man. Sorry. This just bores me to sleep. I'll just keep yawning whenever we start talking about like religion stuff. I am Norwegian said, I'm a little slow today. I'm reading quickly after a busy day. What was the Grand Inquisitor's point? That men cannot handle freedom? That we are limited such that we should rather follow along like sheep? For some reason I felt like I'm familiar with the story Ivan is telling. I wonder if it's been adapted or if it's just been referenced in something I've watched. Okay, Swim said the Mama Fishy said, this is off topic, but maybe of interest. Ivan sets his story during the Spanish Inquisition because of the persecution. There are descendants of crypto-Jews in New Mexico. Okay. Crypto-Jews. What's a crypto-Jew? Crypto-Jew. I'm going to search that term. Crypto-Judaism is a secret adherence to Judaism while publicly professing to be of another faith. Cool. Secret religions. World. Interesting world. Good on you, world. Thanks for being interesting. Okay. That's the conversation for today. Sorry if it didn't make any sense whatsoever. But that was the conversation that happened. So that's that. Now, let us continue to read. Oh my god. There's like six more pages. Seven, eight. There's like eight more pages of rant. Bloody hell. Oh, bloody hell. Alright, and I've lost my place. is my place? Gosh darn it. There it is. Okay. Let us continue. Book 5, Chapter 5. That deception will be our suffering, for we shall be forced to lie. This is the significance of the first question in the wilderness, and this is what thou hast rejected for the sake of that freedom which thou hast exalted above everything. Yet in this question lies hid the great secret of this world. Choosing bread, thou wouldst have satisfied the universal and everlasting craving of humanity to find something to worship. So long as man remains free, he strives for nothing so incessantly and so painfully as to find someone to worship. But man seeks to worship what is established beyond dispute, so that all men would agree at once to worship it. For these pitiful creatures are concerned not only to find what one of... I'm already not paying attention. For these pitiful creatures are concerned not only to find what one or the other can worship, but to find community of worship is the chief misery of every man individually and of all humanity from the beginning of time. For the sake of common worship, they've slain each other with the sword. They have set up gods and challenged one another. Put away your gods and come and worship ours, or we will kill you and your gods. And so it will be to the end of the world. Even when gods disappear from the earth, they will fall down before idols just the same. Thou didst know, thou couldst not but have known this fundamental secret of human nature. But thou didst reject the one infallible banner which was offered thee to make all men bow down to thee alone. Is someone talking to someone here? This is just like random words. What is he saying? Thee thou didst not reject infallible banner which was offered thee to make all men bow down to thee alone, the banner of earthly bread, and thou hast rejected it for the sake of freedom and the bread of heaven. Behold what thou didst further, and all again in the name of freedom. I tell thee that man is tormented by no greater anxiety than to find someone quickly to whom he can hand over that gift of freedom with which he, the ill-fated creature, is born. But only one who can appease their conscience can take over their freedom. In bread there was offered thee an invincible banner. Give bread, and man will worship thee, for nothing is more certain than bread. But if someone else gains possession of this conscience, oh, then he will be cast away, thy bread, and follow after him who has ensnared his conscience, in that thou was right. For the secret of man's being is not only to live, but to have something to live for. Without a stable conception of the object of life, man would not consent to go on living, and would rather destroy himself than remain on earth, though he had bread in abundance. That is true. But what happened? Instead of taking men's freedom from them, thou didst make it greater than ever. Didst thou forget that man prefers peace and even death to freedom of choice in the knowledge of good and evil? Nothing is more seductive for a man than his freedom of conscience, but nothing is greater cause of suffering. And behold, instead of giving the firm foundation for setting the conscience of man at rest forever, thou didst choose all that is exceptional, vague, and enigmatic. Thou didst choose what was utterly beyond the strength of men, acting as though thou didst not love them all, thou who didst not come to thy love for them. Instead of taking possession of men's freedom, thou didst increase it and burden the spiritual kingdom of mankind with its suffering forever. Thou didst desire man's free love, that he should follow thee freely, enticed and taken captive by thee. In place of the rigid ancient law, man must hereafter with free heart decide for himself what is good and what is evil, having only thy image before him as his guide. But didst thou not, though, that he would at least reject even thy image and thy truth if he is weighed down with the fearful burden of free choice? They will cry aloud at last that thy truth is not in thee, for thou could not have been left in greater confusion and suffering than thou hast caused, laying upon them so many cares and unanswerable problems. I feel like this is like a practical joke. Like, this is so poorly written and so boring. I feel like someone's like swapped what's meant to be a good book for like the worst book that they could possibly find in like some huge library. It's so bad. How can anyone be enjoying this? It's just strings of words that just say like one sentence worth of stuff in 3 pages. It's freaking insufferable. Sorry. Okay. So that in truth thou didst thyself lay the foundations for the destruction of thy kingdom, and no one is more to blame for it. Yet what was offered thee, there are 3 powers alone are able to conquer and to hold captive forever the conscience of these impotent rebels. For the happiness of those forces, our miracle, mystery, and authority, thou hast rejected all 3, and hast set the example for doing so. When the wise and dread spirits set thee on the pericon of the temple, and they see thee, if thou wouldest know that thou art the Son of God, then thou cast thyself down, for it is written, the angels shall hold him up, at least lest he fall and bruise himself, and thou shalt know then whether thou art the Son of God, and shalt prove thou he then he how great he is thy faith in thy Father. But thou didst refuse, and wouldest not cast thyself down. Oh, of course thou didst proudly and well, like God. But the weak, unruly race of men, are they gods? Oh, thou didst know then that in taking one step, in making one movement, to cast thyself down, thou wouldest be tempting God, and have all lost all thy faith in him, and wouldest have been dashed to pieces against that earth which thou didst come to save, and the wise spirit that tempted thee would have rejoiced. But I ask again, are there many like thee, and couldest thou believe for one moment that men too could face such a temptation? In the nature of men is the nature of men such that they can reject miracle, and at the greatest moment of their life, the moment of their deepest, most agonizing spiritual difficulties, cling only to the free verdict of the heart. O thou didst know that thy deed would be recorded in books, would be handed down to the remote times and the utmost ends of the earth, and thou didst hope that men following thee would cling to God and not ask for a miracle. But thou didst not know that when man rejects miracle, he rejects God too, for man seeks not so much God as the miraculous, and as man cannot bear to be without the miraculous, he will create new miracles of his own for himself, and will worship deeds of sorcery and witchcraft, though he might be 100 times over a rebel, heretic, and infidel. Thou didst not come down from the cross when they shouted to thee, mocking the reviling thee, come down from the cross, and we will believe that thou art he. Thou didst not come down, for again thou wouldst not enslave man by a miracle, and didst crave faith even given freely, not based on miracle. Thou didst crave the free love, and not the base raptures of the slave. Before thee might that has overroared him forever. But thou didst think too highly of men therein, for they are slaves. Of course, thou religious, rebellious by nature, look round and judge 15 centuries of past. Look upon them whom hast thou raised up to thyself. I swear man is weaker and baser by nature than thou hast believed him. Can he do what thou didst by showing him so much respect? Thou didst, as it were, cause cease to feel for him, for thou didst ask for too much from him, thou who hast loved him more than thyself, respecting him less, thou wouldest have asked less of him. That would have been more like love, for his burden would have been lighter. He is weak and vile. What though he is everywhere now rebelling against our power, and proud of his rebellion, is it? It is the pride of a child and a schoolboy. They are little children rioting and barring out the teacher at school, but their childish delight will end. It will cost them dear. Mankind as a whole has always striven to organize a universal state. There have been many great nations with great histories, but the more highly they were developed, the more unhappy they were, for they felt more acutely than other people the craving of the worldwide union. The great conquerors, Timurs and Genghis Khan's world, like hurricanes over the face of the earth, striving to subdue its people, and they, too, were but the unconscious expression of the same craving for universal unity. Hadst thou taken the world in Caesar's purple, thou wouldst have founded the universe state, and thou have given an universal peace. For who can rule men, if not that he who holds their conscience and their bread in his hands? Stop talking about bread. We have taken the sword of Caesar, and in taking it, of course, have rejected thee and followed him. O ages are yet to come of the confusion of free thought, of their science and cannibalism, for having begun to build their own Tower of Babel without us, they will end, of course, with cannibalism. But then the beast will crawl to us and lick our feet and spatter them with tears of blood, and we shall sit upon the beast and raise the cup, and on it will be written mystery. But then, and only then, the reign of peace and happiness will come for men. Thou art proud of thine elect, but thou hast only the elect, while we give rest to all. And besides, how many of these elect, those mighty ones who could become elect, have grown weary waiting for thee, and have transferred and will transfer the power of the Spirit and the warmth of their heart to the other camp. And then by raising their banner against thee, thou didst thyself lift up that banner, but with us all will be happy, and will no more rebel nor destroy one another as thy under thy freedom. Oh, we shall persuade them that they will only become free when they renounce their freedom to us and submit to us. And shall we be right, or shall we be lying? They will be convinced that we are right, for they will remember the horrors of slavery and confusion to which thy freedom brought them. Freedom, free thought, and science will lead them into such traits, and will bring them face to face with marvels and insoluble mysteries, that some of them, the fierce and rebellious, will destroy themselves, other rebellious but weak, will destroy one another, while the rest, weak and unhappy, will crawl fawning to our feet and whine to us. Yes, you were right, you alone possess his mystery, and we come back to you. Save us from ourselves. Receiving bread from us, they will see clearly that we take the bread made by the hands from them and give it to them without any miracle. They will see that we do not change the stones to bread, but in truth they will be more thankful for taking it from our hands than for the bread itself. I think they'll probably just be happy for you to stop talking about bread. Just give them the bread. Give them the bread. It's bread. You're talking about bread for 4 pages. It's bread. It's bread. I cannot pretend to give a shit about bread. I don't care what it symbolizes. 4. They will remember only too well that it is old days without our help. Even the bread they made turned to stones in their hands, while since they have come back to us, the very stones they have turned to bread in their hands. Too well will they know the value of complete submission, and until men know that, they will be unhappy. Who is the most to blame for their not knowing it? Speak, who scattered the flock and sent it astray? Like how he says speak, as if he's actually going to pause for a response. Speak, who scattered the flock and sent it astray, or on unknown paths, but the flock will come together again, and will submit once more, and then it will be once and for all. Dude, this guy needs a psych ward. Ivan, psych ward. Dude, no one says this many words in a row without letting the person they're talking to respond in some way. You are having a manic episode. Then we shall give them the quiet, humble happiness of weak creatures, such as they are by nature. Oh, we shall persuade them at last not to be proud, for thou didst lift them up, and thereby taught them to be proud. We shall show them that they are weak, that they are the only pitiful children, but the children happiness, childlike happiness, is the sweetest of all. They will become timid and will look at us and huddle close to us in fear as chicks to a hen. They will marvel at us and will be awe-stricken before us, and will be proud at our being so powerful and clever that we have been able to subdue such a turbulent flock of thousands and millions. They will tremble impotently before our wrath. Their minds will grow fearful. They will be quick to shed tears like women and children. But they will be just as ready to at a sign from us to pass to laughter and rejoicing, to happy mirth and childish song. Yes, we shall set them to work, but in their leisure hours we shall make their life like a child's game, with children's songs and innocent dance. Oh, we shall allow them even sin. They are weak and helpless, and they will love us like children because we allow them to sin. We shall tell them that every sin will be expiated if it is done with our permission, that we allow them to sin because we love them, and the punishment for these sins we take upon ourselves, and we shall take it upon ourselves, and they will adore us as their saviors who have taken on themselves their sins before God. You know, if someone spoke to me with half this much God religion babble before letting me respond, I would be 100% certain that they are having a psychotic episode. Like, this is a psychotic episode. You've snapped. You've gone berserk, man. You need the psych ward. And they will have no secrets from... I'm not done. He's like halfway through this, by the way. and they will have no secrets from us. We shall allow or forbid them to live with their wives and mistresses, to have or not to have children, according to whether they have been obedient or disobedient, and they will submit to us gladly and cheerfully. The most painful secrets of their conscience, all they will bring to us, and we shall have an answer for all, and they will be glad to believe our answer, for it will save them from the great anxiety and terrible agony they endure at present in making a free decision for themselves, and all will be happy, all the millions of creatures except the hundred thousands who rule over them. For only we who guard the mystery shall be unhappy. There will be thousands of millions of happy babes, and 100,000 sufferers who have taken upon themselves the curse of the knowledge of good and evil. Peacefully they will die, peacefully they will expire in thy name, and beyond the grave they will find nothing but death. But we shall keep the secret, and for their happiness we shall allure them with the reward of heaven and eternity. Though if there were anything in the other world, it certainly would not be for such as they. It is prophesied that thou wilt come again in victory, thou wilt come with thy chosen, the proud and strong, but we will say that they have only saved themselves, but we have saved all. We are told that the harlot who sits upon the beast and holds in her hands the mystery shall be put to shame, that the weak will rise up again and will rend her royal purple and will strip naked her loathsome body. But then I will stand up and point out to thee the thousand millions of happy children who have known no sin. And we who have taken their sins upon us for their happiness will stand up before thee and say, judge us if thou canst and darest. Know that I fear thee not. Know that I too have been in the wilderness. I too have lived on roots and locusts. I too prize the freedom with which thou hast blessed men. And I too was striving to stand among thy elect, among the strong and powerful, thirsting to make up the number. But I awakened and would not serve madness. I turned back and joined the ranks of those who have corrected thy work. I left the proud and went back to the humble. For the happiness of the humble, what I say to thee will come to pass, and our dominion will be built up. I repeat, tomorrow thou shalt see the obedient flock, who at sign from me will hasten to heap up the hot cinders about the pile on which I shall burn thee for coming to hinder us. For if anyone has ever deserved our fires, it is thou. Tomorrow I shall burn thee, Dixie. I have spoken. Ivan stopped. He was carried away as he talked and spoke with excitement. When he had finished, he suddenly smiled. Oh, you got a bit carried away there, did you, Ivan? You just spoke for 15 minutes straight without taking a breath. You know when you've got that friend who, like, their stories just go for a little bit too long, and, like, they can't really tell an anecdote because they go off on little side tangents and it just goes for too long, and it's kind of like, yep, come on, move the story along a bit. Yep, I get it. You know that friend? And their story goes for like 30 seconds when it should go for 20. this guy just talked for 15 minutes. Alosha had listened in silence. Towards the end, he was greatly moved and seemed several times on the point of interrupting, but restrained himself. Now his words came with a rush. Oh my god. Dusto. Come on, buddy. This is so shit. If a little kid wrote this, I would be like, dude, I'm sorry. I know you put a lot of effort into those 10 pages of dialogue, but that's not how conversations go, mate. I'm sorry, you're going to have to rewrite it like how humans talk. Alyosha said this. But that's absurd, he cried, flushing. He just waits 15 minutes and then goes, but that's absurd. Which bit of the last 15 minutes is absurd, Alyosha? Your poem is in praise of Jesus, not in blame of him, as you meant it to be. And who will believe you about freedom? Is that the way to understand it? That's not the idea of it in the Orthodox Church. That's Rome, and not even the whole of Rome. It's false. Those are the worst of the Catholics, the Inquisitors, the Jesuits, and there could not be such a fantastic creature as your Inquisitor. What are these sins of mankind they take on themselves? Who are these keepers of the mystery who have taken some curse upon themselves for the happiness of mankind when they have been seen? We know the Jesuits. They are spoken ill of, but surely they are not what you describe. They are not that at all, not at all. They're simply the Romish army for the earthly sovereignty of the world in the future, with the pontiff of the Rome for emperor. That's their ideal, but there's no sort of mystery or lofty melancholy about it. It's simply just lust of power, of filthy earthly gain, of domination, something like a universal serfdom. With them as masters, that's all they stand for. They don't even believe in God. Perhaps your suffering inquisitor is a mere fantasy. 4 pages to go, come on. Stay, stay, laughed Ivan. How hot you are. How hot you are. A fantasy, you say. Let it be so. Of course it's a fantasy. But allow me to say, do you really think that the Roman Catholic movement of the last centuries is actually nothing but a lust for power of filthy earthly gain? Is that Father Pacey's teachings? No, no, on the contrary, Father Pacey did once say something rather the same as you. But of course, it's not the same, but a bit of the same. Alyosha hastily corrected himself. A precious admission. In spite of your not a bit the same, I ask you why your Jesuits and Inquisitor have united simply for vile material gain. Why can there not be among them one martyr oppressed by great sorrow and loving humanity? You see, I only suppose that there was one such man among all those who desire nothing but filthy material gain. If there's only one like my old Inquisitor, who had himself eaten roots in the desert and made frenzied efforts to subdue his flesh to make himself free and perfect, but yet all his life he loved humanity, and suddenly his eyes were opened and he saw that it is no great moral blessedness to attain perfection and freedom if at that same time one gains the conviction that millions of God's creatures have been created as a mockery, that they will never be capable of using their freedom, that these poor rebels can never trust turn into giants to complete the tower. That it was not for such geese that the great idealist dreamt his dream of harmony. Seeing all that, he turned back and joined the clever people. Surely that could have happened. Joined whom? That what clever people? Cried Alyosha. Why is he always crying everything? Can you just say it? Completely carried away. They have no such great cleverness and no mysteries and secrets, perhaps nothing but atheism. That's all their secret. Your Inquisitor does not believe in God. That's his secret. What if it is so? At last, you have guessed it. It's perfectly true. It's true that that's the whole secret. But isn't that suffering, at least for a man like that, who has wasted his whole life in the desert and yet could not shake off his incurable love of humanity? In his old age, he reached the clear conviction that nothing but the advice of the great dread spirit could build up any tolerable sort of life for the feeble, unruly, incomplete, empirical creatures created in jest. And so convinced of this, he sees that he must follow the counsel of the wise spirit, the dread spirit of death and destruction, and therefore accept lying and deception and lead men consciously to death and destruction, and yet deceive them all the way so that they may not notice where they are being led, that the poor blind creatures may at least on the way think themselves happy and note the deception is in the name of him in whose ideal the old man had so fervently, 3 pages to go, believed all his long life. Is not that tragic? And if only one such stood at the head of the whole army filled with the lust of power only for the sake of filthy gain, would not one such be enough to make a tragedy? More than that, one such standing at the head is enough to create the actual leading idea of the Roman Church with all its armies and Jesuits its highest idea. I tell you frankly that I firmly believe that there has always been such a man among those who stood at the head of the movement. Who knows, there may have been some such even among the Roman popes. Who knows, perhaps the spirit of what that accursed old man who loves mankind so obstinately in his own way is to be found even now in the whole multitude of such men, existing not by chance but by agreement as such a secret league formed long ago for the guarding of the mystery, to guard it from the weak and the unhappy, so as to make them happy. No doubt it is so, and so it must be indeed. I fancy that even among the Masons there's something of the same mystery at the bottom, and that's why the Catholics so detest the Masons, as their rivals, breaking up the unity of the idea. While it is essential that there should be one fucking flock of and one shepherd. But from the way I defend my idea, I might be an author impatient of your criticism, enough of it. You are perhaps a Mason yourself, broke suddenly from Alyosha. You don't believe in God, he added, speaking this time very sorrowfully. You don't believe in God? He fancied, besides, that his brother was looking at him ironically. How does your poem end? He added, suddenly looking down. Or was it the end? Where is there a poem in here somewhere? I meant to end it like this. When the Inquisitor ceased speaking, he waited some time for his prisoner to answer him. His silence weighed him down upon him. He saw that the prisoner had listened intently all the time, looking greatly, gently in his face, and evidently not wishing to reply. The old man longed for him to say something, however bitter and terrible, but he suddenly approached the old man in silence and softly kissed him on the bloodless, aged lips. That was all his answer. The old man shuddered, his lips moved. He went to the door, opened it, and said to him, "Go and come no more, come not at all, never, never." And he let him out into the dark alleys of the town, and the prisoner went away. And the old man? The kiss glows in his heart, but the old man adheres to his idea. And you with him, you too, cried Alyosha mournfully. Cried mournfully. Ivan laughed. Why, it's all nonsense, Alyosha. It's only a senseless poem of a senseless student who could never write two lines of verse. All that was senseless. Is that what you're telling me right now? And why did you say it all? Why did you say it all if it was all senseless? Why? Why do you take it so seriously? Surely you don't suppose I'm going straight off to the Jesuits to join the men who are correcting his work? Good Lord, it's no business of mine. I told you all I want to do is live on to 2 pages to go, 30, and then dash the cup to the ground. But the little sticky leaves and the precious tombs and the blue sky and the women you love, how will you live? How will you love them? Alyosha cried sorrowfully. How do you cry sorrowfully? With such a hell in your heart and your head, how can you? No, that's just what you are going away for, to join them. If not, you will kill yourself. You can't endure it. Let's hope so. There is a strength to endure everything, Ivan screamed with a cold smile. The strength of the Karamazovs, the strength of the Karamazov baseness, to sink into debauchery, to stifle your own soul with corruption, yes, possibly even that. Only perhaps till I am 30 I shall escape it, and then how will you escape it? By what will you escape it? That's impossible with your ideas, in the Karamazov way again. Everything is lawful, you mean? Everything is lawful, is that it? Ivan scowled, and all at once turned strangely pale. Ah, you've caught up yesterday's phrase, which so offended Musov, and which Dmitri pounced upon so naively and paraphrased. He smiled queerly. Yes, if you like, everything is lawful since the word has been said. I won't deny it, and Mitch's version isn't bad. Alyosha looked at him in silence. I thought that going away from here, I have you at least, Ivan said suddenly with unexpected feeling. But now I see that there is no place for me, even in your heart, my dear hermit. But the formula, all is lawful, I won't renounce. Will you renounce me that? For that, yes. Alyosha got up, went to him, and softly kissed him on the lips. That's plagiarism, cried Ivan, highly delighted. I think it's something else, buddy. It's incest and gay. You stole that from my poem. Thank you, though. Get up, Alyosha. It's time we were going, both of us. They went out, but stopped when they reached the entrance of the restaurant. Listen, Alyosha, Ivan began in a resolute voice. If I am really able to care for the sticky little leaves, I shall only love them, remembering you. It's enough for me that you are somewhere here, and I shan't lose my desire for life yet. Is that enough for you? Take it as a declaration of love if you like. And now you go to the right and I to the left, and it's enough. Do you hear me? Enough. I mean, if I ever don't go away tomorrow, I think I certainly shall go, and we meet again. Don't say a word more on these subjects. I beg that particularly. And about Dmitri, too, I ask you especially, never speak to me again. He added with sudden irritation. It's all exhausted. It has all been said over and over again, hasn't it? Yes, 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 it has. Shut up about it. Shut up about everything. Just don't talk anymore, Ivan. We hate you. And I'll make you one promise in return for it. When at 30 I want to dash the cup to the ground wherever I may be, I'll come to have one more talk with you, even though it were from America. And may be sure of that. You may be sure of that. I'll come on purpose. It will be very interesting to have a look at you to see what you'll be by that time. It's rather a solemn promise, you see. And we really may be parting for 7 years or 10. Come, go now to your pater Seraphicus. He is dying. If he dies without you, you will be angry with me for having kept you. Goodbye. Kiss me once more. That's right. Now go. Oh, I don't mean to keep you. Just let me say this 20-minute rant. You just stand there, please, and I'll talk at you. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have somewhere to be? Is your mentor dying? Well, nick off, then. Ivan turned suddenly and went his way without looking back. It was just as Dmitri had left Alyosha the day before that the parting had been very different. It was just as Dmitri had left Alyosha the day before, exactly the same, though the parting had been very different. The strange resemblance flashed like an arrow through Alyosha's mind in the distress and dejection of that moment. He waited a little, looking after his brother. He suddenly noticed that Ivan swayed as he walked and that his right shoulder looked lower than his left. Oh my gosh, he had never noticed it before, but all at once he turned to and almost ran to the monastery. It was nearly dark and he felt almost frightened. Something new was growing up in him for which he could not account, almost, and the wind almost had almost risen again as the previous evening almost did, and the ancient pines almost murmured gloomily about him when he entered the Hermitage copse. He almost ran. Pater Seraphicus almost, he got that name almost from somewhere almost. Where from almost? Alyosha wondered. Ivan, poor Ivan almost, and when shall I see you again almost? Here is the Hermitage. Yes, yes, that he is, Pater Seraphicus. He will save me from him and forever almost. Several times afterwards he almost wondered how he could, on leaving Ivan, so completely almost forget his brother Dmitri, though he had that morning, only a few hours before, so firmly almost resolved to almost find him and not to give him up doing so, even should he be unable to almost return to the monastery that almost night. Almost. That is the end of chapter 5. Have your say about this book at reddit.com/r/TheHemingwayList. See you tomorrow.